thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
You watch me.
Here's John Williams.
I may just come up with two. Hi, it's John. We're in the Skyline Studio, overlooking and not raining downtown Chicago.
Lord have mercy.
I like to think that our information is always correct, but boy, if we missed it a little bit, I'd be okay with not having the forecast right today. How about you? We're here on the John Williams Show, weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. We just dropped our new Mincing Rascals podcast last night around 5. It was a long one. Lots of local stuff. Hokey smokes. And the first topic was kind of surprising because when we were going over just briefly before we started the Mincing Rascals, I said to one of the rascals, I just don't think that subject pops because that's what we try and do. And she said, you watch. This will, and it does. It cuts to the heart of what Chicago politics is all about. There's one thing Lori Lightfoot's working on. She ran into what was described as a little rebellion at the city council. You'll hear that and more in the Mincing Rascals podcast. We're going to visit in a few minutes with Gabe Emerson. He's that Wheaton College student, one of the kids that was kicked out at Millennium Park last December. There are just some nice kids trying to hand out religious flyers. It's part of their ministry. They're Wheaton College students. They're religious. And part of their ministry is to go out and tell people about the grace of God. It makes them feel good. And if it makes you feel good, everybody wins. But should they be doing that at the Bean in Millennium Park? Because you don't get that. In fact, you can't get that. They ain't supposed to do that. They were doing it. We asked you about that in the news click. Did we do a news click on that, Producer Elif? Did we specifically ask that?
Yeah, it's on the rundown. You can see the results.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Pardon me. Should the city let religious groups solicit at Millennium Park? How did you guess that would go? Should the city let religious groups solicit at Millennium Park?
I thought more people would say...
Yes.
Right.
And only 20% did.
Because it's freedom of speech and freedom of religion as a result.
But that's also freedom from speech and freedom
from religion.
So, yeah, I would have thought it would have went either way. So, not surprising.
Well, I don't mean to be the anti-religious guy, but there I was supporting Eric Zorn's comments the other day when he was saying that he doesn't think that our field goal kicker for the Chicago Bears, Pinheiro, he doesn't like the way he gives his, you know, thanks to God for his field goals. And the more I think about that, the more I think, let's let Eddie Pinheiro alone. Whatever he's got that's working for him, let's let that work for him.
And it wasn't too preachy at all. And we're all taught to worship in our own way. And, you know, I know that I always try to ask for strength. Because asking for something material is not going to happen. So I ask for the strength to help overcome things or work towards my goals. I don't know.
I think pretty much everybody's like that. And then to the degree that you're religious, you pray or think about God even more. Here's my guess, that everybody prays a little bit that's on an airplane.
Yeah. A little bit?
No kidding. I mean, when do I have a regular prayer that I say before and after takeoff.
I hate flying, so I pray quite a lot on an airplane.
And I don't pray a lot, but it's just a little routine I do. It relaxes me, and who knows? Maybe I lob some of those up there and they work.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets up, everybody gets down, we all have a nice day.
Do you say thank you at the end, afterwards?
I don't know that I do, Elif, now that you mention it.
Well, you said you pray before and after.
Yeah, I guess I pray before we take off. I don't remember now if I'm praying when we land, but shame on me. Hey, I know.
I don't pray
my
anymore.
My bad.
No judgments.
Yeah, evidently. You know, I was also thinking, just here's another little passing observation, speaking of the man I described as the most important athlete in Chicago right now, the Bears field goal kicker. But I was thinking about somebody who might arguably be in the top five most important athletes in Chicago right now, and that is Craig Kimbrell, who made a return visit to the Cubs on the mound last night. He's that expensive and, I don't know how to describe him, closer for the Chicago Cubs. He's the guy that when he gets ready to throw the ball, throws his elbows up like the wings of a bird, like he's almost going to start taking flight. You know that look. He sort of bends over at the waist, and then he leans in, and he sticks his elbows up in the air. It's a look, and it works for him, except for when he's pitching for the Cubs. But I think that the sample size of Craig Kimbrell performances or pitches for the Cubs is small enough that it's too soon to say, well, that wasn't a good deal or he can't get it done. He still throws at 96. His cutter still cuts. His curve still curves. Those look like hard-to-hit pitches unless you're that one guy last night who got the winning home run for the Cardinals. So that was bad. But and I know neither he nor any of us has the luxury of asking for a longer timeline to judge the efficacy of his pitching. He's got to get it done right now. But here's the one thing I've always thought about closers who grow beards or have some sort of manic antic on the mound. If it doesn't work, if you give up a game-winning home run or they knock you out, you don't get hit, you know, if you're doing really badly, those antics then just look silly. They just look silly. So after, who was it, Carpenter or whoever hit the home run last night that turned out to be the winning one, and then he leans up and again and throws up his elbows in the air like a bird, but a dangerous bird. Don't come near me because here comes some crazy. And you think, I'm not so sure it's that crazy. The last crazy just went 450 feet. So then it just looks silly. Then it looks just silly. I'm thinking, I don't think that's all that intimidating after all. And it's probably not just that. My suspicion is it's both a crazy look, which you want your closer to have, and also it's just his comfort zone. This is the way I do it, and it works for me. Shut up, John. But it never seems so intimidating after a game-winning home run, I'll say that. Hopefully the Cubs get it together, and the White Sox do too next year. It's 1:15. Okay, let's go to Millennium Park and say hello to Gabe Emerson, the Wheaton College student, one of the plaintiffs in that freedom of speech case against the city after this.
Tomorrow, the Wildcats open Big Ten play when they welcome the Michigan State Spartans to Ryan Field. I'm Dave Addit. Join Ted Albrecht and me for the pregame at 10:30, the kickoff at 11.
Northwestern football, Chicago's Big Ten team on 720 WGN.
You'll always find genuine value when you shop at Blaine's Farm and Fleet. But right now, get even greater savings with our lowest prices of the year. This week only, we've added even more great deals on clothing and workwear for the whole family. Get our lowest price of the year on women's Lee Relaxed Fit straight leg jeans, just $24.99. Our entire stock of men's and women's Champion apparel is on sale, 30% off. Save on women's Lee Riders Classic Fit straight leg jeans, only $21.99. Alfred Dunner Women's Fashion Collections, available in plus sizes, are half off. Plus, save 60% on all Carter's baby clothes. Get our lowest prices of the year on all hardworking Carhartt pants for men and women, $5 off. Save 25% on our entire stock of men's rugged work and sport work boots. Plus, long-lasting Dickies men's full-zip hooded sweatshirts are half off, just $19.99. Don't miss amazing new deals like these when you shop our lowest prices of the year. That's genuine value from Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
Attention investors, not earning 18 to 21%? Then you're losing. Big time. National Realty's Class A Property Fund includes only prime income producing property, built far below market value. You're secured, you're recession proof, with large apartment buildings. You're diversified with income streams from multiple buildings. You have 100% of free cash flows paid to you first. This portfolio has $600 million in new construction equity value in Brooklyn, Hoboken, the Jersey, Gold Coast, and Delray Beach, Florida. National's 12-year track record of proven success with $800 million of property under management is based on prime income property only. Stop recession risk and stock market churn with diversified 18 to 21% returns for IRAs or cash flow. Once you see these Class A locations, you'll wonder what took you so long to call. Call 201-210-2727. That's 201-210-2727. An offer to buy or sell any security is only made by our private placement memorandum. Read it first and invest wisely. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. National is a real estate development firm. See us at NRIA.net.
Yep, I'm here. Just reading the text messages, getting ready to do a radio show. 312-981-7200 to call or text in, by the way. Do call or text in. And remember, too, here's just a quick reminder. We don't have many more weekends to remind you and you to buy those tickets, but I'd really like it for you if you went to our Teddy Roosevelt show, Teddy Saves America. It's going to be at the Elgin Community College Blizzard Theater Saturday morning, October 12th at 10:30 a.m. Where are you going to be Saturday morning, October 12th, 10:30 a.m.? You don't know. Put this on your calendar. There you are. You will be glad at noon that you were there at 10:30. 90 minutes, 2 hours, the show. You get to ask questions. I do, too. It's a rollicking, fun hour or so of storytelling from the most remarkable president we've ever had, Teddy Roosevelt. We do these presidential shows. It's a sort of feel-good civics lesson that I never intended for us to do, but we do them, and boy, they're fun. Go to WGNradio.com/Teddy to get your tickets. After hearing the success that both Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran are having with that Seattle Sutton Healthy Eating Program, our Saturday producer, Griff, is going to do it too. How about that? Now, for Griff, convenience is essential. He loves the fact that Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating does all the work. So Griff now doesn't have to grocery shop, meal plan, cook, clean pots, pans, quite frankly, think about anything that he's going to eat. Wouldn't that be nice? And maybe your kids or grandkids or you would really like that convenience, too. It's like having your own personal nutritionist and chef. And the meals are delicious and nutritious, and they deliver them, in Griff's case, right to his doorstep. Tons of variety, too. The food you should be eating for the rest of your life is what Seattle Sutton's delivering. They're the most trusted name in the business. 33 years, 90 million meals served, 20-plus Chicagoland distributors where you can easily pick up your food or do what Griff's doing and have them deliver it to your door. Call 1-800-442-DIET, 1-800-442-DIET, or go to seattlesutton.com. This has just been handed to me. Thank you, Producer Olive. John, yeah, okay, lots of texts already about our guest. So let's say hello to Gabe Emerson, who is a sophomore at Wheaton College. Gabe, this is John. You're on the air. How are you?
Yes, I'm well. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. So you're from St. Louis, is that correct?
Yes, St. Louis.
How old are you, Gabe?
I'm 19 years old.
19 years old. So this is this your second year? Did you start as a freshman at Wheaton as well?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I think my producer, Elif, told me you're a business major. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct as well, yes.
Why does somebody pick Wheaton? What was the appeal to you to go there?
So for me, my Christian faith is very important to me. And I also really wanted a sense of academic rigor. And so I think Wheaton really does faith and learning very well.
Yeah.
They combine those two very well.
You know, we visited with the people that put together the catalog of colleges, the Princeton Review of Colleges. Did you see this year's Princeton Review of Universities and Colleges in the country? It's a ranking of the 386 best colleges in America. And then they have the best and the worst. And Wheaton does very well over and over again for a lot of the things that the students that go there are looking for. Just like you said, academic rigor, you know, a faith-based education, stuff like that. It's a specific school for, I think, a particular kind of student. Like, as a business major, do you want to go into the business world, or do you imagine a career in theology somehow?
So, yeah, I think I'm going to end up going into the business world. But also, like, as a Christian, I'll always use a theology. So, like, it's really nice to be able to have those classes along with my business classes.
And what kind of, describe your religion or your faith to me.
Yes, sir, yeah. So, as a Christian, I believe that Jesus Christ came into this world as God incarnate to save sinners, and he did that through dying on the cross. And that to me is just a beautiful story of God's love for his children. It's played a part in my life since I was a very young boy.
Is your family religious too?
Yes, my dad was a pastor in a church where I grew up in Kentucky.
Nice.
That my parents both went to seminary, which is like a kind of a grad school for Bible people.
And so is it also your faith or your belief that you should go out and tell people about God?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So in Matthew, in the Gospel of Matthew, it's one of the accounts of Jesus' life. It says, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations." It's interesting because, like, in the Greek, it says, "as you go." So it's really just like all Christians, as we're living our lives, are called to share this great news that we've been given with anyone and everyone who's willing to listen. And that's why I think this Millennium Park case is so important for Christians.
What happened to you guys last December?
Yeah, so my three friends, Matt Swart, Caden Hood, Jeremy Chong and I, we throughout various points in December and then on through April, we would be sharing with people in the park, and a few security guards they came up to us and said, "Hey, you can't do that here." At one point, one of us was even, we were just having a conversation. We weren't yelling. We weren't even handing anything out. We were just having a conversation about religion with someone. And they said, "You can't talk about religion here. You have to go to the sidewalk." And that just doesn't really make any sense to me. It's like, well, why can't I just have a conversation about religion? Like, why is that so wrong? And so then we talked to one of the professors in one of the departments at our school. His name's Captain Iglesias. And he's like, that's not constitutional. He put us in contact with some lawyers, I think that's correct. That may be wrong, but he put us in contact with the lawyers, and they've been so helpful to us. They've really done the majority of the work. So without the help of Captain Iglesias and the law firm, we really wouldn't be where we are today.
So you guys are suing the city over this issue. You want the right to be able to hand out your leaflets and talk to people. So was it that simple, though? That is, if I would walk by you, you might hand me a piece of paper, or would you also then walk with me? Were you speaking loudly to everybody around?
Yeah, so really it comes down to just what this particular person in our group prefers to do. Some people do speak loudly, some people don't. And then also, like, if someone doesn't want to have a conversation with me, I'm not going to make them. I don't think I should ever force anyone to have a conversation with me. So if we did happen to be walking by and I handed you something and we stopped, I may just start walking with you. Yeah, if you were okay with that, and we'd talk and have a conversation.
You know, and anybody that's walked around the streets of Chicago knows that you're not infrequently solicited for Save the Whales, for environmental causes, religious issues, political reasons, whatever. And a lot of times we'll just look at them and say, no, thank you, and keep walking. If I do that to you, you peel off. You don't follow me anymore, do you?
No, that's correct, sir. I wouldn't follow you anymore. I'd be like, all right, have a great day. I just let you go on your way.
How many of you were in your group when you were doing this? Did five?
So there were four of us who are the plaintiffs in the case. But on a traditional Friday night, we usually do this every Friday night. There can be anywhere from 5 to 30 people who go out, and we all go like all throughout over the city. So we all may or may not go together. We usually split up into pairs of little groups. And we will hand out pamphlet literature, or sometimes people will raise their voices and talk in a corner.
Yeah.
Or sometimes people will just go and like buy meals for the homeless, or just go and sit and talk with people at places like the Ogilvie Transportation Center, where someone may have missed a train and they just start for a conversation.
Yeah. Wheaton College student Gabe Emerson's on a line, and he's one of the plaintiffs in the case. Students are suing the city of Chicago. They want to be able to do what he's just described at Millennium Park. They were told that they cannot. One of my colleagues, we do a podcast here, and in it we were all talking about it, journalists and talk show hosts from around town. And when we were talking about your case, I know one of the reservations about your otherwise good intentions is that if we say okay to you, then we have to say okay to everybody and anybody. And then the freedom of flow and the thing that Millennium Park is no longer going to be Millennium Park. It's going to be Bughouse Square. Bughouse Square is a neat thing. I've participated in it before. It's where they take a park. They literally have soapboxes. You stand on them and you give your spiel and people come and go. But that's not what Millennium Park is, and it's what it could become if we say to every group, yes, you can solicit, yes, you can preach, yes, you can politicize at Millennium Park. So that's the flip side to that, Gabe. I'm just wondering what your reaction to that is.
Yeah, so my reaction would be, so before a few days ago, the verbiage of the law, and if anything was like, anything was disruptive, if anyone considered what anyone said disruptive, they couldn't say that. So let's say like I have a neon shirt on and someone doesn't like my neon shirt. They can't wear that neon shirt because it's disruptive. Now they've changed it to objectively, which I've been told by one of the lawyers that there's like a legal doctrine of the word objective. And that basically means that it's like if the general populace would agree that that's objective.
Yeah.
But I still think this one of the great things about this country is that we're able to speak freely about things that may or may not be controversial. And I don't know, I think William Park is one of the, it's one of the top attractions in this country. And I think people should be allowed to like have conversations there. We got kicked out for just having a conversation once, like yeah. putting all the like the preaching or handing out pamphlets aside. We were kicked out for just talking about Jesus.
Gabe, I'm out of time, but I think you've represented your side and your feelings and your school really well. So, you know, kudos to you for that. And let's stay in touch and see how this thing goes. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
His name is Gabe Emerson, and he's a sophomore from St. Louis at Wheaton College.
Hey, John, you know, you talked about the food trucks and Chicago starting to sell pot on Michigan Avenue. What, do you think it'd be beneficial if they had more food trucks selling? Because everyone is buying pot and have the munch.
Oh, that's good. Really, if you know what, we're crazy. If we're going to allow people to smoke pot or at least buy it on Michigan Avenue, then we sure as heck better have some snacks.
They're not going to be able to get food quick enough. Like, where's the nearest food truck?
You got to feed the need.
Thank you, Mike. Hang up your phone now.
Nobody wants to stand in a line at Chipotle. Come on.
140, this is WGN. Boy, talk about conversations you haven't heard the last of. A pot shop in the Gold Coast. You got to have snacks nearby. Part of yesterday's show. This is John Williams. It's 140 on WGN. Not that long ago, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune, Blair Kamen, wrote a piece headlined, "A School Lanyard, A Driver's License, A Tiny Guitar, Mementos of Gunshot Victims, to Phil Memorial that opens at Cultural Center next week." Well, here we are that week. This new memorial consists of four small houses, each painted white. They're made of honeycomb-like bricks. And inside each of these honeycomb-shaped bricks are artifacts from people who have lost their lives due to gun violence. Art tends to make people think deeper than just a story on TV or an article, said Annette Nance Holt. She's one of the mothers whose son's artifacts will be displayed. She last year became the first woman in Chicago to hold the post of first deputy fire commissioner. The memorial, which honors gun violence victims around the United States, is likely to be, said Blair Kamen, one of the most talked about displays when the third edition of the Chicago Architectural Biennial opens up September 19th. Well, here we are for that, a sprawling contemporary architecture and design exhibit. So far, about 165 artifacts have been gathered at events in Washington and D.C. to be displayed there. A couple of numbers jump out at me when I read Blair Kamen's story. He writes, "The objects which will be displayed in each of the four houses include a bow tie of a man killed in a 2016 shooting in Orlando at the nightclub that took 49 lives. There are also expected to be artifacts from elderly rural men who committed suicide. Suicides account for nearly two-thirds of gun deaths, according to Every Town for Gun Safety." Another number that jumped out at me was the number of people. Here it is. "There is space for many more artifacts to be added, unfortunately. The architects designed each of these houses to have precisely 700 openings. That represents the number of Americans who are killed by guns in an average week." Wow. We've talked to Dan O'Connell before. Dan, welcome to the show. Welcome to the studio. Nice to see you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
You are, by title, the Director of Communications for the Chicago Architecture Center, correct?
That's it. Yes, I'm.
And you folks are hosting the lady to my left.
That's right. Tomorrow we'll have Jadie Williams will speak at the Chicago Architecture Center starting at 1:30 tomorrow afternoon to talk about the process of creating these kinds of memorials.
And by the way, this exhibit is open now through January 5th.
That's right, at the Cultural Center.
At the Cultural Center.
Right.
Jadie Williams is here, Mass Design Senior Group Associate and Spoken Word Artist with Dan O'Connell Media and Communications. Did I get that right? Something like that?
Something like that.
What's the name of the firm?
Mass Design Group.
Mass Design Group.
Yes.
And you're an architect by design, by
yes.
trade.
Yes.
So your connection to this display in Chicago is what? Your organization designed that?
Yes, so in collaboration with the artist Hank Willis Thomas, as well as Everytown for Gun Safety, and then the organization here, Purpose Over Pain, with Pam and Annette, we four together designed the exhibit that's currently here, and I'm the project manager from Mass Design Group.
I get goosebumps, unfortunately, but maybe that's the idea when I think about how intimate a bow tie or a school lanyard is from one of the victims of gun violence. That's so, the idea, right?
That is the exact idea.
And then how do you display that? Who came up with the idea of, well, let's make a house? And talk to me just about the four white houses and how that came to be.
Sure. So I think one of the first priorities for our team was to explore how do we represent these people, their stories, their narrative? How do we avoid just representing these numbers? We don't want to abstract the numbers. We often hear about the numbers. We always see the statistics on the media, and that's not what we wanted. We wanted to be able to tell a personal story. And so through those explorations and those conversations, we ultimately decided, well, we should collect personal objects, personal artifacts of these people that give visitors an opportunity to see themselves in it. And then the decision there was to place them in these houses. The house that you see when you go to the cultural center is a very familiar archetype. It's a form that people are familiar with. They feel comfortable approaching it. We didn't want to make an abstract form that nobody knew how to get into and to how to approach. And then there's also a layer of domesticity to the conversation when you make it a house. You know, gun violence affects us so personally, and it really has an impact on families and on homes, and we wanted to be able to capture that in the form.
Are you involved at all in the gathering of these artifacts, and how difficult is it to ask somebody for them?
I'm very involved in the gathering of them. So we had 6 workshops total where we collected objects, 2 days in Washington, D.C., and then 4 days here in Chicago, and I was at all 6 of them. And it is very emotionally charged to ask somebody to relinquish an object of their loved one.
Do you put out a public plea? Hey, does anybody want to contribute?
Yes. So we worked with a lot of survivor networks. Like I said before, mostly Everytown for Gun Safety and Purpose Over Pain, but they sent out email blasts and social media posts to their very wide-ranging networks in order to say, these are the dates where the collections are happening.
What sort of things did you get?
So many things. We got photos, baby photos. We received hats, locks of hair, eyeglasses, favorite toys. Some families made dioramas that had a collection of their loved ones' interests and purposes and passions. So it's a very wide range of objects.
Why are they giving you those things?
They're giving them to us because they believe in this project. They believe in this process, and they want to see their families, their loved ones' legacy continue. They want their loved ones to be memorialized. And they see art, as you saw in the quote that you offered from Annette, they see art as an opportunity to begin to impact the way people are thinking and the way people begin to understand this epidemic.
We get numb to it. And it doesn't make us bad people. If you just see the story over and over and over again, you go here. It happens not just with the daily shootings in Chicago. It's now happening with mass shootings.
Yes.
You go, yeah, another mass shooting. Which one? Was it the one in El Paso or the one in Ohio? I don't remember. Mm-hmm. It's just a blur, isn't it?
It is. And that is the problem, that it's now becoming a blur, that we're becoming numb to it. And we... You know, in collaboration with our partners, want to ping that numb. We cannot afford to be numb to it.
You know, I think part of the numbing of it, or part of the way that some people process this is, well, it's not me, it's not us. My family and community is safe, so I feel really bad for the people that live in Austin or Inglewood, but I don't live there. We're not going to go there. We'll be safe. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that when we marginalize the black community or the poor community that way, we forget that guns are killing people in all communities as well. And you guys kind of point that out in this architecture as well.
Certainly. So when we're saying gun violence, we are representing the full range of gun violence victims. It is not urban crime that we're referencing. It's not young black men only. We're also addressing suicide. We're addressing domestic violence. We are asking people from all levels of gun violence experience to contribute to this project.
I thought I saw this in the article. You may know it, but I believe a higher percentage of gun deaths are attributed to suicides than homicides, correct? Mm-hmm. We kill ourselves more. Say it again.
Two-thirds
of what?
Of gun violence deaths are suicides.
Are suicides. Okay, so and that doesn't cut any stripes. That's not black, that's not white, that's not old. That's all of us. Mm-hmm. You talk amongst yourselves about what to do with that statistic. But so you recognize that. This isn't just urban violence. This isn't just homicide.
No.
It's what? What is this reflecting? What are you alerting us to in this?
That this is a national epidemic. This is a larger countrywide problem, and therefore can be a national solution.
So we have this house, mm-hmm. four houses, mm-hmm. painted white, and then honeycomb. I can just imagine what that looks like. The bricks are see-through.
They are.
And then inside, like, oh, I don't know, shelving, we have little artifacts from individuals.
Correct.
Tell me about a couple of the other stories or individuals whose artifacts are displayed.
Surely. There's so many to think of.
Do it this way. I have to take a pause, my producer told me.
Okay.
Cogitate on that for a second. Let's come back and talk about that with Jadi Williams. She is with Mass Design, and she is from Boston.
Yes.
This display is in Chicago, and it's at the Chicago Cultural Center. She's going to be giving a talk at the Chicago Architecture Center on Saturday about this display at the Cultural Center. We'll tell you more about how to get there and how to do it. It's free and open to the public until January 5th. Sounds like a worthwhile field trip for all of us. It's 150 on WGN. Jadi Williams is here. She's the person that oversaw the installation of this memorial project at the Chicago Cultural Center that reminds us that when we talk about gun violence, it's lives, it's not numbers. They've built four white houses out of honeycomb bricks, and in each of these honeycomb-shaped bricks are artifacts of people who've lost their lives to gun violence in America. When? Is there a time frame to this?
No, there's not.
Yeah. And but one other question about the victims whose artifacts are displayed, donated by family mm-hmm. members. Do you care? I mean, are you saying we need to have so many black or white? Or what about if it's gangbangers and they were shooting each other? I mean, do you characterize these people in any way?
So we're not, there's no criteria that says, you know, we have to have this number of black people or we have to have this number of white people represented. We're more so concerned with ensuring that the families that are contributing on behalf of these gun violence victims know that there's an opportunity for them to be seen, to be heard, to be welcomed into the project, and that their loved one is going to be represented. And so we don't actually know the full stories until we're sitting across the table from someone and getting their information, because when you fill out the form, we can't see you until you arrive.
I just can't imagine what the day was like when you said, come. You've done this several times, you said. But I imagine mothers and fathers, relatives showing up with paper bags, and inside are something that they've pulled from the bedroom of their son or daughter, and they're handing it over to you. Mm-hmm. What an act of faith that is, and courage. And then they must want to tell you. So you're just sitting there receiving hundreds of these stories. Am I correct in that characterization?
You are absolutely 100% correct.
Well, thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. I was with a team. I was not doing it by myself.
So what do you have there?
Oh, so yes. So this I have. We printed out a grid of all the objects that we've collected over the six collection days.
Josh, stay close to the microphone.
Oh, yes. Sorry. We print out this grid of the photos of all the objects that we had collected over the 6 days as an opportunity for us to be able to see the wide range of what we had in front of us ahead of beginning to place the objects for yesterday's opening. And so what I have here are photos of everybody's objects with their names attached to them, which is very easy for me to remember, because when you're sitting across the table from somebody's parent, you're listening, you are hearing them. And so there's so many stories that have stuck with me.
Well, I'm just looking at the pictures you took as you organized this. This isn't for public display, but I see what's at the display now. Looks like a North Carolina blue baseball cap, a mm-hmm. basketball, a knit cap, a tape measure, a mm-hmm. Stanley tape measure, a mm-hmm. belt, a bow tie. Tell me a story. Tell me about a person.
Sure. So the belt that you're seeing here is Zamari's, and we actually met his mother in Washington, D.C., and she came and she sat in the room and she just immediately started talking about her son. Before she even told us what it was that she had, she just started talking about her son. And so, of course, we're listening. And then eventually I say, well, can you show me what it is that you've brought today to represent Zamari? And so she pulls out this red and clear bag, and she has the belt in there, and she opens the bag and immediately starts crying. She hasn't even taken the belt out of the bag yet, and she starts apologizing, and I'm like, please do not apologize. You take your time. This is your moment. And she started to explain that this was the first time that she had gone in her son's room in 5 years. She and her two older children have not touched his clothes, have not washed his clothes, have not taken anything out of his room. And her and her two older children together decided that this was the time to do that. This was the moment that they should figure out what it was that they wanted, how they wanted to start that process. And so her bringing us this belt was the beginning of that. And I was speechless.
Yeah, not to be trite about it, but now her son comes back to life. Mm-hmm. Now there's a purpose to this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, my goodness. Okay, so this our time has lapsed. Ja, anything else you want to say or tell us?
I think what's most important for me right now is to help folks to understand that we're still collecting objects. This memorial is a living memorial. It's active. This memorial does not exist without the contribution of families that are willing to contribute their objects. And so people can bring objects to the cultural center during all the opening hours. Yes,
really?
You could. Yes, at the welcome center. On the ground floor of the cultural center, you can come and drop off objects. And then the mass team is coming back on October 26th to have a larger object collection workshop as well.
Well, this Gun Violence Memorial Project has a real clever website. It's called gunviolencememorialproject.org.
Yes.
gunviolencememorialproject.org. If you forget that, WGNradio.com will post a podcast of this conversation and a link to that.
Excellent.
Okay, Ja D. Williams, thank you for coming to Chicago.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for doing what you're doing.
You're very welcome.
My goodness. I think I've said that twice, but I'm almost speechless about this, and I'm glad that this exists, although we're sorry for the reason that it does. What is the website if people want to find out more about the Gun Violence Memorial Project?
So it is the gunviolencememorialproject.org.
Not with the word the.
Not with the word the, sorry. So gunviolencememorialproject.org.
You were sharing with me the pictures from the exhibit, right? So go see the actual things at the exhibit. But she, for our purposes here, brought in photographs of the items. And again, you'll get goosebumps. And I think really this reminds me of when you go to the Holocaust Museum in Skokie or in Washington, D.C., and you see buttons or shoes that were fastened by or worn by people who were actual human beings who died as a result of the Nazis, then you go, oh, my God, this is so personal. You sort of suddenly get it. And I'm having that same feeling literally just looking at pictures of these things. And I said to you off the air, this should be a documentary film about these mothers and fathers, about whoever is bringing these items in, those transactional moments with you, and about the exhibit itself. And you said maybe that's going to happen, right?
It is going to happen. A friend of ours, of Michael Murphy's, one of our founding partners, his great friend Harula Rose, who's the director of Fruitvale Station, has actually been working with our team through this collection process. They brought cameras to the fabrication studio, and they're actually going to continue the conversation by spending some more time with a few families over the next year or so with the thought and with the plan of creating an entire documentary around the gun violence epidemic.
Well, you or Dan or somebody keep me posted on that.
Yes.
Because we'll tell that story too.
Excellent.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hard to top.
Here's John Williams.
That last hour. My goodness, I believe I've said that for three times now, but I'm still appreciative of our last guests, the subjects they were talking about. And we're going all the way until 3 o'clock today. It's Friday. That means in the last half hour, we'll do that thing called The Bright Side, where you call in, tell us some good news in your world while you're smiling. We'll smile with you. It's a group hug on the radio, and it works every single time. Let's do this. Cynthia Noble's in our studio right now. Art on the Mart is one of, I think, the great, unique things about the city of Chicago, about the downtown vibe and vibrancy, and about art. I don't know if you've heard about Art on the Mart, but we have this building called the Merchandise Mart, and its facade is one of the largest canvases in the world, if you will. And so the laser light art display that they project onto it is, in fact, that, the largest in the world. At least it was last time we visited with Cynthia Noble, who is the executive director of that art project called Art on the Mart. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Still biggest?
Yes, we still claim the title. It's over 2.5 acres of surface area that we cover with the illuminated art coming from 34 projectors that are installed on the Riverwalk.
That was 2 years ago that it first started?
Just a year. We're just around our first year anniversary.
Oh,
so
no kidding.
this is a great time to come see Art on the Mart if you haven't already. And if you have, we're presenting some great new works very soon, tomorrow.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Although I remember last year I was at the unveiling. It was
Yes. Last
year then. I don't think I've ever seen Rahm Emanuel happier.
That's wonderful.
Because I believe it was by then that we realized he wasn't going to run for re-election. And so you could just see the burden lifted off his shoulders of having to run and govern. And he just seemed so happy about that. And maybe anticipating the Riverwalk to the east of Michigan
yes.
Avenue. He was just delightful. That was a real fun day, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. And the great thing about the project is that it's a 30-year agreement with the city. And so we're grateful to former Mayor Emanuel for helping us kick this off and having it be part of his vision. And we look forward to future work over the course of a long time.
Yeah, no kidding. But I mean, so this has been up and running then for a year now. So what's new about tomorrow?
So we've been actually changing the work seasonally. And so for our fall season, we've decided, because in part of our alignment with Expo Chicago, the Contemporary Art Fair on Navy Pier taking place also right now, and the Chicago Architecture Biennial, which is an on-year, we would like to also throw a party and invite the public to join us to view the fall installation. We have an exciting program as featuring two new commissions. One is the work of the artist Charles Atlas, who was a pioneer in video art. He came from the New York scene early on in the 70s. He worked with the likes of Merce Cunningham, New Warhol, etc., and has created an amazing work for us that I encourage you all to come see.
Can you describe that much?
Sure. It's a work that features numerals, believe it or not, numbers. It almost feels like a count up instead of a countdown. And with these chapters or vignettes, he has these abstract images that are brightly colored that kind of dance across the building, which is maybe a perfect way to describe it, given his history with the dance world.
So we see these images in numbers or whimsical numerical shapes dancing across the front of the merchandise mart?
Yes, and it's about an 8-minute piece, and it's surprisingly so moving, given that it's numbers and something that just feels very data bound, and yet it allows our minds to kind of float and think about the meaning of that in our lives and the meaning of other things associated with counting, like choreography and etc. And it comes with music. The music itself is also a newly commissioned work, and we will have audio speakers available on Wacker Drive and on the Riverwalk, so it'll be a fully immersive experience.
Yeah, I guess if you're doing this, the Merchandise Mart is obviously on the north side of the river there, so the place to view it would be on the south side of the river, right?
That's right. The best places to view are on Wacker Drive between Wells Street and Franklin Street, and we'll have that area of Wacker Drive actually close to traffic, so it'll be a safe and comfortable place for people to view, and also on the Riverwalk. On the jetty area, especially.
And you're not too far from where it branches off to the North and South Branch there. And do I remember correctly, haven't they put in kind of like a stair-stepped seating along the bank on the south side there? Are there places to sit there or
yes, there are benches right on the jetty directly in front of the Merchandise Mart. There are also another great place to view is that area that you're describing, the confluence. Some might conjure the image of the large Adirondack chairs and that grassy area. That's a wonderful place to view. But if you're upstairs, if you're on Wacker Drive, yeah, you can also enjoy some amenities that we'll have there, including a DJ and food trucks beginning about 6:30 p.m.
6:30 tomorrow night, and then this latest installation begins at 7:30, and then it'll run every night of the week. 30 minutes after sunset is when the new projection begins every night.
Correct. Of course, we need the darkness, and so we begin about 30 minutes after sunset, and we are 7 days a week through the end of this month, and then we conclude our summer hours and begin October 1st with our 5 days a week schedule, which are Wednesdays through Sundays, also 30 minutes after sunset. And each evening we project for a window of 2 hours. And so we have a block of content, these two artists, plus some other wonderful content you can experience, that is approximately 30 minutes. And so that 30-minute block of content loops over the 2 hours.
How late does it go into the evening?
So since the start time varies as sunset changes, so approximately till about 9:30, since, for example, we're beginning at 7:30 tomorrow evening.
So then at 9:30, and then if you come downtown at 10, it's over. You have to wait till the next day to see it. You're not going to run it all night long.
Correct. There are many opportunities to see this. One reason I would encourage people to come out for this unveiling tomorrow, however, not only all the fun and the festival atmosphere, but we are including some surprise images that will only be on view this weekend in alignment, again, with Expo Chicago. These images are other artists' works that are part of the Override program, which is a digital billboard program, a collaboration between Expo Chicago and the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. And so, essentially, they're pop-up images. You'll see them at billboards across the city, and we have the unique opportunity to also present them as little glimpses also on Saturday night and Sunday, this weekend only.
Cynthia Noble is here. She's the Executive Director of Art on the Mart. We're talking about that. You may know of Noble Art Tours. That's your company, Noble Art Tours, where you are a private company that gives art tours for hire. If I said, hey, we're coming to town, or we're in town, we want you to show us, walk me through the Art Institute, watch me through the contemporary art. Is it called the Contemporary Art Institute?
Yes, Museum of Contemporary Art, Chicago, yes.
But you do, or do a walking tour outdoors of some of the art objects?
Absolutely.
Do you take people to the Bean, for instance? Is that considered an object of art worth description?
Oh, yes. Anish Kapoor's Bean, which we belovedly call it, or he named it, of course, Cloud Gate. But
And he wants us to call it Cloud Gate.
He wants us to call it Cloud Gate. I'm not sure how he feels about our moniker for it. But yes, absolutely. All the great work of public art in Chicago. So we'd like to guide people wherever one finds art in the city.
So what are the most popular tours? Where are you being most often asked to take people?
Yeah, people do enjoy public art in Chicago. So when the weather permits and in the warm months in Chicago, we have many tours, both walking or with a car or other transportation service. And people always love the greats that you've mentioned, the Art Institute of Chicago, the Museum of Contemporary Art. And of course, we have a wonderful gallery scene. So many have enjoyed gallery walks or rides. And also special venues like the Chicago Architecture Biennial or Expo Chicago. So when there are temporary events that are art or architecture related, we're also happy to guide as well.
I asked you about, and maybe you can just quickly tell us here, what is that display on the south side of Grant Park? Looks like a bunch of metal figures that are walking. Am I making any sense there?
Yes, the headless group of figures. I think you're thinking of the Abakanowicz sculpture. And I also very much enjoy that work. She's an artist who hails from Poland. She's passed now. And it was sponsored, funded in part by the Polish-American community in Chicago. And it was developed in my mind, as part of a positive response to the wonderful artworks, the public works that were placed in Millennium Park just a few years previously. So I think Millennium Park can absolutely be seen as an inspiration for not only Abakanowicz's work, but also the continuation of public art in Chicago, including Art on the Mart, as the next point in that wonderful trajectory.
You know, we were talking about Millennium Park because some folks want to hand out religious flyers there the other day, and I was just describing the scene in Millennium Park. And one of the things that I like, and everybody likes too, are the lit obelisks that shoot the water out of the people's faces into the cooling pool. That's art too, right?
Absolutely. It's a work by Plensa. And Joan Plensa, an artist from Spain, was commissioned to do that work at the advent of Millennium Park. And it's been a touchstone for us at Art on the Mart because it's, of course, a digital work of art. And yet, when you think about that, many years have passed, I'm guessing about 15 since the installation of that work, it seemed very timely for Chicago to take another look at new media art for the public in the city. And we hope that Art on the Mart is going to be that next great moment.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so tomorrow night, 6:30, and then 7:30 is the kickoff, if you will, of the news displays by Charles Atlas and Petra Courtwright, among others. at the Art on the Mart. That's the Merchandise Mart on the Chicago River downtown. And again, through October 1st, you can go there 7 nights a week. Each night, a half hour after sunset. After the 1st of October, wait till Wednesday night of any given week through Sunday to see it. It runs for 2 hours once it runs. So if you're ever downtown, make sure you swing by and appreciate the latest public installation of art in the city. Cynthia Noble, thanks for coming in and visiting with us today.
Thank you so much. And we're at artonthemart.com if you'd like more information. Thank you so much.
Welcome to your weekend. It's Friday. It's 2:40 on WGN. I'm John Williams. Producer Elif, what are you playing for us?
Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks will be playing at 5 p.m. at Sugar Records Sunday for a record signing. So visit sugarrecords.com. That's S-H-U-G-A, sugarrecords.com. And get your record for $22 for guaranteed entry to the event Sunday at 5. Sugar Records.
Sugar Records. Here's why I'm hoping the forecast is wrong. The Lung Force Walk that I'm captaining is Sunday at 10 a.m. Independence Grove Forest Preserve in Libertyville. Register at action.lung.org or chicagowalk.org, chicagowalk.org. I'm going to be there a little before 10, and then you and I are going to walk for 3 miles, less if you like. We're going to raise a lot of funds and awareness about lung disease. Lung Force Walk Sunday, 10, Libertyville. See ya. Lauren Lapka's in our studio.
Yeah, of course, as always on a Friday. You know when I'm actually here. I wasn't here last week, but that's okay. This weekend we have the Norwood Park Fall Fest today and tomorrow. So today 5 to 10, tomorrow 12 to 10. And it's a weekend of delicious food, live entertainment, fun activities, and you could do some local business shopping if you want. So good time. That's over on Northwest Highway, so that's closed between Raven and Sayre. But good time all around.
If they're not having an Oktoberfest near you, move. Because
there's a lot of them.
Because there are a lot of them. Let's hit a few. Today and tomorrow, Oak Park, 4 to 10 today, noon to 10 tomorrow. You get in for free, and then you spend your money on good food and beverage while you're there. South of Lake Street on Marion Street and North Boulevard in Oak Park today and this weekend. What have you got?
They also have the Oktoberfest in Glendale Heights. That already started last weekend, continues throughout the month. So Fridays, it's 5 to 12. Saturdays, it's 12 to 12. And Sundays, it's 12 to 10, Camera Park. There's also Oktoberfest in Palatine. So today, 5 to 12. Saturday, 12 to 12. Sunday, 12 to 6. And Berwyn Oktoberfest. So that's today, 6 to 11. And tomorrow, 12 to 11.
I won't say this is going to be a lot of fun. I think you'll be glad you did it, though. That gun violence memorial project we talked about includes a presentation from our guest that was in earlier, Jadi Williams. That's going to be at 1:30 tomorrow, a showcase of the narratives of people who have lost lives to gun violence. It's very powerful and well done. It takes place at the Chicago Architecture Center, 1:30 tomorrow. Come downtown or swing by if you're here. It costs you $15 to get in. Information at gunviolencememorialproject.com. What have you got?
There's also the Harvest Powwow in Naperville, so you can experience Native American culture through dance, drumming, arts, and storytelling. And there's also archery, birds of prey you can take a look at, food booths, crafts for sale, and a kids' corner, and that's over at Naper Settlement. So tomorrow, 11 to 10, and Sunday, 11 to 5.
Navy Pier's always got a lot of fun things going on. I'm more a fan now than I used to be. The International Exposition of Contemporary and Modern Art, a big art show at Navy Pier through Sunday. 135 galleries from 24 countries and 68 cities displaying work. Cost you $30. Information at expochicago.com.
There's also the Englewood Jazz Festival. That's Saturday and Sunday, 12 to 6. Completely free, and it will feature a dozen performances over the 2 days in Hamilton Park.
Here's your sports calendar. Bears are away Monday. Boy, that's a long time from Thursday, then Sunday, then Monday. So we're only missing one day. We play Monday night at Washington, 7:15 for that one. Cubs are home against the Cardinals. They got to get it figured out. 1:20 tomorrow. What's that? The Cubs game over today?
Winning right now. I believe it was the fourth. Last Jen gave an update.
White Sox are away at Detroit playing the Tigers. 6:10 after the 5:30 news, our pregame coverage on WGN. And the Wildcats take on Michigan State tomorrow. Northwestern's at home. They're in Evanston. 11 a.m. kickoff. Our pregame coverage begins a little after 10 tomorrow.
Boo, Spartans. Go, Cats. Also, Blackhawks pregame or pregame preseason tomorrow. They play
Isn't
the Bruins.
Isn't it weird to turn on the TV and see hockey?
Oh, it's amazing. I miss hockey.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh, my God, I forgot. The Hawks are on. Let's go. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Anything else from you?
Well, if you want to, free museum day is tomorrow, so they have a full list of museums participating. If you go on there, you can get a free ticket for two people to go visit one of many, and it's statewide, so you don't even have to just be in the city.
I presume that's the museum campus then, too, as well?
I believe that one's
Field,
on there for sure.
Art Institute, stuff like that.
If you want to look at the list, it's on the SmithsonianMag.com website.
It's 244 on WGN. Okay, here's where you call or text, 312-981-7200. Our Bright Side of Life segment is sponsored by your friends at the Joint Relief Institute. They also pay for the pins we hand out, our Bright Side of Life pins. Yeah, we'll give some of you some of them, too. You know, if you go to our Teddy Roosevelt show, which is going to be Saturday, October 12th at the Blizzard Theater at Elgin Community College, you get a Bright Side of Life pin for showing up. Nobody was more positive or cheery than Teddy Roosevelt. He'll be live on. So this is a fun thing to do. He'll be live on stage with me, talking, answering my questions, really just telling his stories. You know how we say Chicago stories told here 24/7? The best storyteller with the best stories was Theodore Roosevelt. So he's on stage. I'll get in the way. Then you ask questions. We'll have a lot of laughs and learn a little bit about Americana. That's going to be Saturday, October 12th. Tickets at WGNradio.com/Teddy. Take a breath. This is The Bright Side. Here we go now.
Some things in life are bad.
We do this on Fridays. We say pause for a minute.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
Call or text 312.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
981.
Ah, grumble. Give a whistle.
7200.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
I think today is International Always Look on the Bright Side of Life Day.
Always look.
Kevin's not here.
I know. He doesn't get to whistle. Hey, that
was Kevin. Yeah. Cool.
Don't tell Kevin, we did well without him because he owns the whistling part. All right, here we go now. Call or text 312-981-7200. We'll start with line three, and that means Jim. Jim, are you there? You're on the air. Hi.
Yes. Hey, how you doing, sir?
What's up?
What's up is my father. Oh, my gosh. He is...
I know what you told Producer Elif. I'm sorry, Jim. I know you're having trouble about that, but thank you for calling. We appreciate you joining us. We'll go to Fred. You're on WGN. Fred, you're on the air. What's your bright side?
Hi. I love your bright side segment.
Thank you, sir.
My son, Brandon, and his fiancée, Taylor, were married last Saturday in a beautiful outdoor ceremony in Door County, and the theme of the wedding was beer.
It's my kind of wedding.
And darn, we weren't invited. Oh. You know we were available last weekend, Fred. I guess you can only ask so many people, huh?
It was beautiful.
Thank you, sir. Happy days to them. What are you reading?
630 says their bright side is that after a few injuries this summer, they just picked up their packet for the Fox Valley 20-mile race, and they're preparing for the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah, that's
where to go.
That's when is that? That's in October, isn't
yeah.
it? Usually,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Michelle, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because I am road tripping from Chicago to Breckenridge, Colorado, for my beautiful daughter's wedding.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's gonna be nice.
Hey, you know what?
I know. I'm so excited.
I'm going to give you some Bright Side of Life pins, one for you, one for the bride. I'm going to give you four. You share those with
Yay.
Whoever needs them, okay?
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Hold on, Michelle. Give the audience the good. What are you reading over there, Lauren Lapkin?
847 says that they're celebrating 40 years of marriage, one son, a daughter-in-law, and beautiful granddaughters. It's a lot to celebrate.
On line six, it's I think it's Jacqueline. Hi, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling? You're on the air.
Oh, my gosh, John. I love your show.
Hooray!
Yeah, I didn't tell her this part. I've been unemployed for just almost a year now, but
two good things, actually. We just won our class action lawsuit against our former employer. I won't say the name, but we won our class action lawsuit and got our 2 months back pay that we were denied because we were let go with no warning. But the bigger thing is I'm going to see Hamilton next week with my sister because I won two tickets.
Oh,
and
wow.
She's the one that wanted to go. We both took raffle tickets on it, and I'm the winner. So I'm taking her.
You were due for some good news, weren't you?
It was a whole basket. We also got a gift card to go to Rosebud Prime and the soundtrack and a program and two pairs of Hamilton socks. Which we're not going to wear there.
And two so pairs of Hamilton socks. Wow.
Yes. So it's like.
Happy days. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Now let's take. Who's next here? Well, I guess Judy's next. Let's go to Judy and then Nancy. So, Judy, you go next. You're on. Hi, Judy. You're on the air. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. I'm Judy from out here in Hanover Park. We're celebrating our granddaughter Macy's 7th birthday today.
Happy birthday! Yeah. Life seems jolly rotten. What are you reading?
I really like this one from Jay. Their bright side is their grandma, Lois, turned 102 yesterday. She lives in Brookfield and loves life and what life offers to us all.
Did I see the story last week that there was a guy who went to his first White Sox game? He was 112 years old.
What?
So help me. It was 112.
Wow.
That there's a person alive.
Hey,
and
John,
he's a
can
Chicago
I just interrupt
White
you
Sox
real quick?
Fan. Go, Kim Gordon.
Here's what we have so far. Two people have been injured, one person in custody. It appears someone drove a car through the window of the Sears store at the Woodfield Mall. Don't know anything about a shooting. It doesn't look like that at this point. But someone, we are seeing video of someone driving through the window at the Sears store and then continuing to drive through the mall. Two people are injured, and police say they have one person in custody.
No reports of any fatalities?
No, not at this point.
A lot of people have asked us if that was gunfire that was causing the panic. I think that's people's first guess. You do not have a report of gunfire?
Not at this point.
That's Kim Gordon in the WGN Radio Newsroom. Remember that the Bright Side of Life segment was sponsored by Joint Relief Institute. Now, if we are done with commercials, correct? I'm looking at you and you said, okay, I've been watching the video of this black SUV driving through the Sears at Woodfield, and you have no idea, nor do I, what the motivation is behind this, but it is bizarre to see a large black SUV knocking over kiosks and displays inside a department store. At first, I wondered if maybe this was somebody who was having a medical emergency or something and they had lost control of the car. Sometimes vehicles go through windows and storefronts that way. But this appears to be a vehicle driving down the aisle, around kiosks. And it's actually what I'm watching now is it's actually in the common area between stores. And it's navigating around some of those kiosks and displays they have, and then it accelerates quickly through the mall as people are jumping out of the way. Looks like there's some security personnel running after that vehicle, but that's the video that is being displayed on Twitter right now. That just happened at Woodfield Mall, and that's part of WGN Radio News. Chicago's stories are told here 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. By the way, Rokan, you folks ready down the hall?
We are. We're watching the same video as you are, and we are on Ryan Burroughs on his way there, so we'll get you to that. It is very bizarre, as you point out. This vehicle not only went through; it's a late model SUV that looks to be clean, right? I mean, yeah. I know that sounds like a crazy thing to say, but it's like, this is somebody who's taking care of that vehicle, driving through what appears to be the mall part of this and knocking over the kiosk and then backing up.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So it's not somebody having a heart attack and they're leaning into the accelerator. They're navigating that vehicle around.
Right, right. So we're still trying to figure that out.
And the video shows people just scrambling as this car is moving around inside the mall and there's debris everywhere and that kind of thing. It does appear very intentional.
Yeah. So, obviously, we'll have more. And they moved from the Sears store where they breached the mall and then down into the concourse area of the mall as they're moving through here. It clearly was somebody who was intent upon doing that. But as we will now take you into the WGN newsroom and bring Kim right in, that this does not appear to have resulted in any injuries at this point, and we're being told there is one person in custody.
We're told one person's in custody. We were hearing earlier two people have been injured.
All right. Take it away from here.